From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm David Andrietta, in for Evan Dawson. The seeds for our connection this hour were planted in the United States about a century ago, but their fruit has been getting more and more attention in the last decade or so as national and worldwide events have exposed vulnerabilities in our financial systems. Most of us recall the collapse of the markets brought on by the subprime mortgage crisis of 2008, and more recently, of course, the economic fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about public banking. And no, I don't mean members of the public banking, making deposits and withdrawals and whatnot. I mean the idea of a public bank, that a government, perhaps a state or even a municipality like a city or county, could hold their own deposits of taxpayer dollars and lend them out to individuals, companies, developers, nonprofits, who would then reinvest that money back into the municipality. That's a simplified version. We'll get into the weeds this hour. The concept is not only a foreign one to a lot of Americans, but to some, a downright frightening one. Well, my guests today aren't afraid. Each in their own way is forging ahead with a public bank agenda, including right here in Rochester and across New York. And they're not alone. According to the Public Banking Institute, a nonprofit that advocates for the creation of public banks, nearly two-thirds of all states have either bills in their state legislatures or measures on the ballot with an interest in public banks. Organized groups or candidates with public banking platforms or legislation or executive orders that have already passed, such as in New Jersey and California. With the balance of power in New York government having decidedly shifted toward the Democrats, and some would argue a more progressive bent in recent years, the state seems poised to at least take its first baby steps toward the formation of public banks. To talk about all of this, I'm delighted to welcome four guests to the panel. Melissa Marquez, CEO of Genesee Co-op Federal Credit Union and a founding member of the Rochester Public Banking Coalition. It's a pleasure to have you on the line.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show.
You got it. We also have the Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation, and no stranger to this program, Simeon Bannister. He's here with us in studio. What a pleasure it is to have you in the studio, a real live person in the studio. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure. We were filming the All-American Cities Award today that we hope to be successful in and was in the neighborhood, so figured I'd just come on up.
I'm glad you did. Assemblymember Harry Bronson, a sponsor of legislation in the State Assembly that would authorize the creation of a public bank. He'll talk to us more about that. He's on the line. Assemblymember, always good to talk to you. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you, David, for allowing me to join you and have a conversation with your listeners on this topic.
And joining us by phone from, I believe it's California, Walt McCree, Senior Advisor and Chair Emeritus for the California-based Public Banking Institute. We're grateful for your time. Do I have that right? Is that where you're joining us from, Walt?
Thanks, Dave. No, I'm actually in Virginia.
In Virginia, other side of the country.
but PBI, the Public Banking Institute, is based out of California, and that's where a lot of activity is happening in public banks.
I've seen that, and I want you to tell us more about that. So I'd like to start with you and start the conversation with baby steps, because while the concept of public banking has gotten, it's gotten a lot of press over the years, it's not something that's, I think, on the forefront of most people's minds, I think. And I suspect a lot of people don't have a handle on the concept. I edit a newspaper that is an affiliate of WXXI News. And a reporter of mine brought this to my attention about 6-7 months ago, the idea of a public bank. I'd never heard of it, had to do some research, better understand it. He wrote an article. We now have some movement here in Rochester. So, and I think of myself as a fairly, you know, well-read person, and it wasn't something that was top of mind for me. So real softball question. In the simplest terms, what is a public bank and how does one work?
As you said in your opening, a public bank is owned by a city, county, state, or other governmental agency. It is typically a separate agency of government. It is a bank that is, as we've envisioned it, and is most commonly known through the only public bank in the country at the moment, for the Bank of North Dakota. It is a banker's bank, meaning that it doesn't make loans to private individuals, to citizens, or to others directly. Now, there's no rule that says that it can't, but there's a reason for that that we could go into after a bit, which is basically that a public bank is a partner to the local economy and to local lenders. So it is a professionally run bank. It's not run by politicians. It shouldn't be anyway. It would be a disaster if it did.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that, so go on.
Yeah. Well, and of course, that's the sort of thing that you can kind of design out of the bank before it begins, so that you you ensure transparency, accountability, professionalism, accountability, et cetera, the things that will keep the integrity of the bank intact. And the purpose here is that the cities, counties, and states have spend about $5 trillion a year, they have debt of that size in the bond markets and elsewhere. But in the instance of Rochester, for example, you're spending from what I can see, just in terms of bond interest, about $13 million a year, which is $130 million in 10 years, and the numbers just build. And the idea there is that the city's money, it's instead of giving it to Wall Street, instead of handing all of the money that the taxpayers put in over to the big banks, you can keep it locally, keep your money at home to invest in yourself. And I'll leave it there for the moment.
Well, let me just circle back on that. It sounds reasonable, sounds logical, it sounds helpful. Why is there only one public bank in the country?
Well, as you also said in your opening, they're all over the world. About 25-30% of the assets of the world are held in public banks. The United States used to have public banks, but banks that were owned publicly, or at least by their regional governments. But since 1913, since the start of the last century, the Federal Reserve solidified or homogenized or pulled together the banking interests, and they pretty much dominated both the field and the conversation. So banking is kind of an elusive territory for people to either understand, and it hasn't really occurred to many people until, I'll tell you how we came across it about 10 years ago, was when our co-founder Ellen Brown wrote a book called Web of Debt, where she noticed that North Dakota was the only state that survived the 2008 financial collapse, which was brought on by bank activities. And then she discovered they have a public bank that isolated them from the global banking cartel and from the speculation and the various activities that they do, which are which are not helpful to the local economy. That's a microcosm of what we're trying to create around the country, and that is that if cities, counties, and states hold on to their money and invest in themselves, they have a built-in stability mechanism that is not available if you send your money to Wall Street. Once you send it to New York, they do what they want to with it, with your money, as opposed to letting you have the opportunity to invest in what you guys need in Rochester.
So it's creating something of a value system, I suppose, too.
Absolutely.
Or acting on a value system, I should say.
Right, because one of the things you can't do now by using the Wall Street banks, you can't guide where your money is spent. So they might, and they're obviously they invest in all kinds of things around the world, a lot of things that the communities don't want to have, which might be fossil fuels, private prisons, payday lenders, a whole host
sure.
of items that kind of cross the line for many people. And just as a sidebar, it's those concerns that the citizens of California took, and in other states as well, have been taking to the fight, as it were, because they say, look, our money can do better if we control it.
Melissa Marquez, CEO of the Genesee Co-op Federal Credit Union. How is what Walt just described similar in ways to your financial institution? And what ways is it different? Tell us a little bit about what the credit union does.
Well, Genesee Co-op Federal Credit Union is actually a community development financial institution, but we are quite different from a public bank. And in fact, one of the reasons the credit union has joined the Rochester Public Banking Coalition is to promote and make possible, the founding of a Rochester public bank. because we would then be partners, like what Walt was saying. We see who we serve are our members. We serve individuals. A public bank would be serving or would be established to be able to be in partnership with our credit union and other credit unions and other community institutions in the Rochester area. So they're complementary.
It's interesting that you say that, because before we got into the show with Simeon here in studio, which is a real treat for us now, we were able to actually talk and have a conversation, and we were kind of both wondering what the compliment was or the interest was for your financial institution that it would have in a public bank. It might seem on its face that it's actually competitive, but you're saying it's complementary.
That's right. It's complementary in nature because, you know, looking at the Bank of North Dakota as an example, and, you know, what I would see as hoping to have happen here in Rochester is that we could do participation loans together. So the risk on some lending could be shared. And that's, again, not just for the credit union, but for other financial institutions in the Rochester economy, because that is how the Bank of North Dakota has operated. They actually help do participation loans, as well as they provide, in fact, you know, one example would be the PPP loans that were available to small businesses that through the SBA. The Bank of North Dakota really flourished more than any other state in terms of getting out that money into the community, because it was a collaboration between the Bank of North Dakota and local lenders who were actually making the loans to individuals.
Simeon was nodding his head here. What interest does an outfit like the Rochester Area Community Foundation have in a public bank? How do these two intersect?
Well, I think we're still learning, but let me just say this. Here's what I know about Rochester. I know that we are one of the poor cities in the country, by any measure, in the top five poor cities in the country. And we've got real issues with childhood poverty in particular. And I know that we need to maximize every single dollar that's flowing through our local economy to have an impact in reducing poverty and deconcentrating it and in improving the quality of life for our residents. And I think one of the things that's interesting about the public banking concept, we just heard Walt say the potential just in fees alone to save $10 million. Imagine what $10 million every single year could be doing in this community. It could potentially be transformative. And then you get the double benefit. So not only do we get the savings, but then the dollars themselves, the tax levy itself, can be put to work to improve communities, to invest in urban entrepreneurs, to invest in the infrastructure in this community, and to really be transformative in ways that improve life for our residents. And that's certainly something to explore further.
And would you see this, the bank, as could it lend to nonprofits, or how would it partner with the community?
Well,
in your eyes.
Well, what I understand is that there's a degree of flexibility depending on how the legislation is structured, amongst other things. But it certainly could. I mean, and you think about a lot of nonprofits that take advantage of lines of credit, primarily. It does beg the question how we can mobilize more resources for a relatively undercapitalized sector. And we're seeing that undercapitalization, the effects of it, as we go through this experience of COVID. I can think of several nonprofits that have had to close their doors already, those that provide some really important and essential services as a function of being undercapitalized. And so if there are ways that we can mobilize more resources and make them available in this community, then that's a net benefit, not to mention the fact that just having the dollars themselves, just having the resources being used in the community themselves, even if it's not directed towards specifically towards nonprofits, just having more resource in the city, right, stimulating business development, again, working in ways that can deconcentrate poverty, makes it easier, the environment that nonprofits have to work in. And so in a whole lot of ways, it seems to me that, again, this is certainly an area that's worth exploration.
So speaking of the legislation, you know, right now we're really just speaking in hypotheticals. This has been proposed in Rochester, not in any meaningful way in terms of like the legislation, because there is no legislation at the local level. There is legislation, however, at the state level to try to make this happen. And that's where I'm going to turn to Assemblymember Harry Bronson, sort of bring us back down to earth here, get us out of the hypotheticals. You've sponsored legislation in the Assembly that would do what precisely as it pertains to public banks?
What it would authorize is any municipality, county, or a collaboration among municipalities and counties. So they could get together and charter a public bank that would be authorized through an application process that would go to the Division of Financial Services at the state level. It would, there's certain requirements that it would have to be independent of the locality, that there would be a separate board of directors, that there could be advisory boards through various sectors in the community, and the chartered public bank would have to serve the public interest. And so that would be things like missions to advance racial, economic, or environmental justice. And the idea would be, as the panelists have spoken to earlier, reinvest in New York's low-income neighborhoods, in neighborhoods of color, and meeting whatever other public interest critical community needs as identified by that locality.
Why, Assemblymember, is the legislation even necessary? I mean, how do these laws differ for the establishment of a commercial bank as opposed to a public bank?
Yeah.
Do you have a handle on that?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. The whole purpose here is because under current federal and state banking laws, they're structured and regulated with the sole purpose of making money. So it's a profit purpose. What this would do, and so currently Rochester could set up a commercial bank, but it would be set up under a regulatory scheme that is to promote profit. What this does is it authorizes the chartering of the public bank with a public interest purpose, with a mission to move forward a set of policies and investments that have been identified by the locality. So as Simeon mentioned, the needs of the city of Rochester, or actually Monroe County in general, those needs of helping people get out of poverty, encouraging entrepreneurship, encouraging more racial economic justice. Those kind of things are allowed under the public bank system that are not necessarily recognized under the commercial banking system.
And Assemblymember Bronson, what is your sense in Albany as to whether this legislation has any traction? I looked at public banking bills in preparation for this discussion today, and you know, I want to say they date back to at least in New York, at least 2011, from what I could tell. Sort of reintroduced every session, they you know, go nowhere. What is your sense this time around? Because I'm feeling like, at least on this side of the microphone, this side of the media equation, that there's more attention being paid to them.
Yeah, a lot more attention being paid to them. I think there's much more focus on the inequities that exist. Part of that is as a result of COVID-19. Part of that is a result of Black Lives Matter. Part of that is a result of having both the Senate and the Assembly majorities be in the Democratic Party. The two prime sponsors, Assemblymember Avenatti in my house and Senator Sanders in his house, have done a great job of really starting educational programs, and that's why I'm so grateful to be on your show. There are at least 55 community labor and economic justice organizations that have endorsed the piece of legislation. And so there's a lot of traction here, and I think it fits in with the movement of not only our state, but a movement in our country in connection with things like housing justice and economic justice and racial justice.
I want to remind listeners that we invite you, of course, to join the conversation. Call in with questions or to share your thoughts. Public banks, are they a good idea? If not, why not? If so, why? Would you trust politicians in our community to set it up? What do you see as the benefits? We want to hear from you. We've got an email from Jim in Irondequoit. He says he's very happy to hear this topic being discussed. It's something he's advocated for years, is creating a local currency as well, as many municipalities have. Is that something that you've ever heard of, Simeon, a local currency?
I have not heard of a local currency, although I suppose with this cryptocurrency movement, there's a lot that's happening in that sector. So, no, I'm not familiar with local currencies.
But I'm thinking of the currency in my kids' classroom, you know, school bucks or something like that. If they do something good, they get a school buck. But it certainly sounds like a fascinating concept. We've got Barb on the line who has a question for our panelists as to how these banks might work. Barb, are you on the line?
I am.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to sort of sum up what I've been hearing and see if I'm on the right track. So what I'm hearing is either like a local or a municipal public bank do several things. First, it would help free up capital from other banks it partners with by either like, you know, when a bank makes a loan, it might buy up the loan. So then that bank would have the capital again to relend in the community. But it would also then sort of, in a way, be that bank would still be accountable. And they would be able to make sure, the public bank would make sure that that bank is actually making quality, affordable loans and not making predatory loans like they did in 08 when they sold their loans on the secondary market. It would sort of be a local secondary market. That's one thing I'm seeing. And then another thing I'm seeing is that it helps keep the money local rather than having it go to New York City. We would still keep the money local, reworking in the community more time. And then another thing I'm hearing is it would help distribute the risk from different institutions so that one institution wouldn't hold all the risk anymore if there happened to be a downturn in the economy. And I'm just wondering if that makes sense, what I'm saying.
All right. Well, I'll throw that to our guests. Walt or Melissa, would either of you like to take that? Does Barb have a handle on the concept?
Well, I'd love to, before Melissa says, I would like to say Barbara has nailed it. she's really got a nice understanding of how the mechanics of a public bank work, that it nurtures local investment by holding on to our assets and moving through and in partnership with groups like CDFIs, like Melissa's credit union and community banks that are directing money directly into the economy, and also at targeted populations and targeted missions, whether it's affordable housing, economic justice, environmental justice, whatever. But I want to just add one thing that's really cool about banking that makes it so extraordinarily exciting. A bank leverages its capital up to 10 times. The Wall Street banks do it many more than that. But that means that if you capitalize a Rochester bank for $50 million, you have the potential to drive $500 million in loans through that bank, depending upon where you can get the deposits. But there are a variety of sources for that. So what you have there is a very strong new tool to leverage your capital, your equity as a city, into dramatic new levels of lending that go into the pockets that you want it to go to. So that's a very key component of having a bank as opposed to a revolving fund.
Well, and the question then becomes is who wants the money to go where? And Lisa from Rochester is on the line, and she has a question. Would public banks support buying houses and ensure more racial and economic justice? Do I have that right, Lisa?
Well, it's kind of – I'm trying to figure out if this was going to support, for example, in areas where the property values have been going up, but also the rent, you know, the, more things have been turning into rentals, largely for students in some areas. How we can invest so that if landlords, for example, give up their rentals and want to sell them, they aren't just going to another landlord and can be sold to, you know, a single-family owner who, because of redlining and other things, have not had the opportunity to rent in some parts of the city and in the suburbs. And I just don't know how that meshes with, I'm assuming, this public bank needing to maximize its investments, and so it's going to want to sell to the to the largest.
But I think that's what separates that from a commercial public bank from a commercial bank is that it doesn't necessarily have to maximize its ROI. Obviously, it wants a return on investment. You know, no bank is in business to lose money, but my understanding is that its banking is done in the public interest, and as long as it's not losing money, it's okay. Do I have that right, Simeon? What are your thoughts on this?
That's exactly right, and I can tell you something that's relatively analogous. At the Community Foundation, we're launching an effort, mission-related investment, which is really comparable and actually would be rather compatible with this idea. The point here is that we're trying to maximize social impact in addition to the financial returns. And so the social impact as a driver really changes the nature of the potential investment. So, for example, think about Rochester. Think about the neighborhoods that have been underinvested. Why does that happen, right? Why aren't we driving resources into the Crescent? Well, part of that's because when a bank has to maximize its returns and it looks over the schema of where there are opportunities to do so, you say, well, those neighborhoods, you know, they're not going to drive the highest rents. They're not going to drive the highest return. When you have the city's interest aligned with its own development, that changes the dynamics dramatically, and it creates opportunities to drive resources into places that perhaps have been underinvested for years. And I think your caller rightly points out so much of that has a racial auveur for why those areas have not received the kinds of investments that would make them sustainable. Guess what? That makes the entire region stronger.
Well, I want to touch on, again, another part of Lisa's question, though, and we've lost Lisa. Lisa, thank you so much for calling. But she asked, you know, where would these interests be coming from? So, Simeon, you're talking a lot about the interests of the city. Assemblymember Bronson talked about the public interest, that this bank would be beholden to that. So who then decides what those public interests are? And I'd like to throw this to Melissa, because, Melissa, you sit on the public banking, Rochester Public Banking Coalition. What do you envision would be in the best public interest for this type of financial institution to lend its money to?
So I want to address Lisa's question, and in particular focus as one example on affordable housing and mortgage development, and just, you know, in increasing housing that is affordable for all people to continue to live in the city and not be impacted by displacement. So, and as an example, the way I want to talk about it is, our little credit union, which at the time was about a $25 million credit union, I was sitting in a meeting from the Rochester Community Reinvestment Coalition, who, you know, gave out a report, and I was looking at mortgage lending in the city of Rochester, and I noticed that J.P. Morgan Chase, who actually holds, you know, upwards of $250 million of the city of Rochester's money on deposit, and is the largest deposit holder in the Rochester Monroe County area. Mm-hmm. They did fewer mortgages in the city of Rochester than our little financial institution. They did more dollars, but in terms of actual numbers of mortgages, we beat them. And that is the moment for me when I was like, something's got to change.
So, yeah, you're on to something here. Melissa, I am so late for a break. We're going to take our only break of the hour, the shortest break in radio, as your regular host, Evan Dawson, likes to say. So stay with us, and we'll be back with more Connections in just a moment.
I'm Megan Mack. Tuesday on The Next Connections, Monroe County Executive Adam Bello wants to create an independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission for the county. The commission would draw new boundary lines for the county's 29 legislative districts. Proponents say it would ensure a fair and impartial process for that. Opponents, including members of Bello's own party, say there's no evidence to support that claim. We explore the issue. Talk to you Tuesday.
You're listening to Connections. I'm David Andrietta, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about public banking. Not the public doing its banking, but a public bank, a bank owned by the government, a municipality, like a city or county. The concept is a relatively foreign one to most Americans, but here to help explain it to us are four guests. Melissa Marquez, CEO of the Genesee Co-op Federal Credit Union and a founding member of the Rochester Public Banking Coalition. Simeon Bannister, Vice President of the Rochester Community Area Foundation. Assemblymember Harry Bronson, sponsor of legislation in the State Assembly that would authorize the creation of a public bank. And Walt McCree, Senior Advisor and Chair Emeritus for the California-based Public Banking Institute. As always, we invite you, the listener, to call in with questions or to share your thoughts. The number to call is 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. Or by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. And of course, you can always email the program at connections@WXXI.org. The phone lines are lighting up. We've got Betsy in Brighton with a question. Betsy, welcome to Connections.
Thanks
for listening.
Thanks for doing this today. I was wondering, does this mean that the bank would be FDIC insured just like a regular bank?
Betsy is reading from my script of questions because that is one of the questions I have. My understanding is that it wouldn't be.
It would not be.
But, well, that's my understanding. I'll let the experts speak to it. Who would like to take this one? Walt?
Yeah, probably not. And that's one of the constraints of the of typical conventional banking legislation or chartering that we would not want to have. First of all, if you're a city, county or state, you don't $250,000 is not going to be a sufficient coverage insurance. But there are other types of ways to ensure the lending that's done there, loan guarantees, various different products that are available. But remember that this is not a bank. It would be giving loans to private parties. They would be doing that through credit unions or commercial community banks.
So it doesn't work. So, like, I have an account at Canandaigua National Bank, which I love. They have great service, and I love that they're local. So this would not operate in this way. This is more of like an investment type bank. So, like, if I had a 401k that needed to be rolled over, is this the type of situation I would use it for?
You know, actually, it's designed to not compete with the community lenders that are already in place, and I think that's really on every level. The idea there is to preserve and enhance and support local businesses that are banks and credit unions that lend into the community, as Melissa illustrated with her mortgage lending. So this wouldn't affect you. It wouldn't affect you personally in that way because you wouldn't be doing business directly with the public bank. Your city, county, state would be doing business with it.
Right. So how is it capital?
Go ahead, Betsy.
Go ahead, Betsy.
I'm wondering, like, how do local people be involved in it? Then is it only for businesses or is it for private individuals myself? Because, like, I wanted to do an investment for a rollover that I had to do, and I wanted to pick ethical things to invest in, but at all of the banks, you're kind of forced into these large conglomerates which don't give you those opportunities. So I'm just trying to figure out what could a private citizen do to take advantage of this or to invest in their local community.
Yeah, it doesn't provide that kind of investment platform. It would not compete with the commercial entities that are doing that. It's just not its role as a citizen. How you'd interface with it is perhaps as a community watchdog or as somebody who would be involved in helping to shape where the bank would invest its money. But basically, it's providing the financing services for the city, county, and state, as opposed to commercial services for individuals.
So, Walt, how are these banks then capitalized? I mean, what I mean, what is the source of their capital? If not individual deposits.
Well, there are lots of ways that a bank could be capitalized. One would be an appropriation from the city council, but there are other sources as well. There's a kind of a third rail possibility of some pension funds investing now in corporate C paper in some cases around the world. That would be one possibility, but there are many other sources of money and ways to bring it into a capital base for a bank. And I think that's something that would be determined locally once you figured out what you wanted the bank to do.
Betsy, thank you so much for the call. We've got an email from Michael who writes, if I can get it here, I want to throw this to Assemblymember Harry Bronson. Michael writes, I think that the idea of having politicians running a bank is a horrible one, kind of like having drug addicts running a pharmacy. Woo, that's harsh. But the reason I bring that up is because that is not what would be going on here. That's not what this legislation would envision, and it's not what the Public Banking Institute envisions either. So, Assemblymember Bronson, let's try to dispel this myth that the politicians will be involved in it. What do you envision the involvement of elected officials, local at the municipality or county level or wherever such a public bank would be set up? What sort of involvement do you envision them actually having?
So the legislation is set up to clearly make sure that the public bank would be run and operated independent of the government that establishes it. So the government that establishes, let's use City of Rochester as an example, the City of Rochester would, as we just talked about, provide for capital by making deposits. In addition to that, there would also be sponsor organizations that could deposit into the bank. The governance of the bank itself, the chair of the board of directors and the majority members of the board of directors cannot be governmental employees. The folks who sit on these boards have to live in the jurisdiction of the governmental entity that established it. There would be, in addition to the regular board of directors, there would be advisory boards. Again, those boards would have to be filled of members from the jurisdiction, hopefully matching the demographics of the jurisdiction. And the majority of the members on those advisory boards have to be outside of and cannot be connected to the localities. So politicians and governmental officials will not be operating the bank. It will be operated by others, but the funding would come from those localities, and from sponsoring organizations would also be able to contribute to the capital funds of the bank.
So Chris writes in on Twitter, you know, how would a community bank be insulated from political interests? You've touched on that a little bit, Assemblymember Bronson. How do you keep the community assets and capitalization of the bank from being used for pet projects? And, you know, we're bringing up two sore spots here, the Fast Ferry and the soccer stadium. But how do you avoid that kind of investment in those kinds of projects?
Because those decisions wouldn't even be made by the board of directors. That would be made by the staff of the bank, and the final determinations would have to be made by the staff, not the board itself. The board would only be responsible for establishing the mission statement of the organization, assuring that there's a conflict of interest policy in place, ensuring that the bank is sufficiently capitalized. In fact, in order to get approved, they have to show that for a 3-year period before approval will be given. So that's at the very high level. The actual loans that will be made and the investment would be, they can be guided by the general principles of the locality, but the final decision is made outside of the governmental entity.
So I'm going to turn to Bonnie in Rochester on line 2. She's been waiting for a while. Bonnie, thanks for listening. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, a couple. One is that just to let people know that the Green Party Monroe County and the actually the National Party has had the issue of having public banks on their platform for a number of years now. And I think I can understand why people get confused about this thing. These things. I think it would be great if we had a public meeting, an open meeting at the library or something, and people could come, and then you could get exchanges face to face when it gets a little healthier, I guess. But the other thing is, I think what this is designed for, and I'm not an expert on it, but it's designed for an opportunity. If anybody who works with neighborhood groups, if you live in a neighborhood, especially in the city, and you're working on things that you know your neighborhood needs and collectively needs, and not just Mrs. Jones or something, but, you know, the collective, it's often hard to find funding for these things. And it would be great. I think it would open up some opportunities that would be citizen-based more that we need. And I won't go through them now. I can think of several, examples. So that's a huge problem right now. I mean, there's things that would be much better, you know, would be good for various communities or parts of the communities that, you know, you can't get funding for because everybody wants high-end investors and all that. So, okay, so we support it, and it would be nice to have what I recommend, too, is, when things get open up a little bit more, maybe, is for people who want to talk about this to go to some of the neighborhood meetings to set them up. You know, there's a list of them, too. And I'm talking about the grassroots ones mainly, not the ones that maybe are known by name. So, okay.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. I'm gonna throw that to Melissa in just a moment. But first, Simeon is nodding his head at the comments that Bonnie had about investment. What did you want to add?
Yeah, just two things. The first is that it's certainly not the same as an in-person conversation, but Councilperson Mary Lupien did hold an online Zoom meeting to kind of expose folks to the concept of public banking, and I anticipate that there'll likely be much more of that in the future, including some in-person opportunities when things open back up. The other thing, and just connecting to Betsy's earlier question about how the individuals in the community can benefit, and so while there's not a direct interface with the bank itself, the folks that are interfacing with the banks, namely organizations like Genesee Federal Co-op Credit Union, do have that public face. And so when you think about the ways that you want to transact in the community, if you go to banks now, depending on which one you go to, you'll know that it'll be a little bit difficult. And guess what? If you're a person of color, it's probably even a little bit more difficult. We know about the history of some of the kind of discriminatory activities that have been practiced in banks. And
of
so
course,
this is an opportunity.
That was, our first hour was dedicated to that today.
Indeed.
But unfortunately, we got cut off by the governor. But we will revisit that on Thursday.
That's spectacular. I think it's an important conversation because this kind of, you know, opportunity gives us the chance to put in the kind of guardrails to ensure that we don't see those kinds of practices, and frankly has an incentive with the dollars that are lent to institutions through the municipality.
Simeon mentioned Rochester City Council member Mary Lupien. She was invited today. Unfortunately, she had a conflict and couldn't join us. So, Melissa, I want to touch on what Bonnie asked about in terms of getting word out to the public here. We've heard Assemblymember Harry Bronson tell us that he feels that this legislation might actually have some traction. After so many years, there's a new attention being paid to injustice, inequity, and this might just be the kick that legislation like this needs. So what's your next step as a member of the Rochester Public Banking Coalition to get that word out and educate people on this? Is there an agenda in place on that?
Actually, education is very essential to the to establishing and having at the state level the possibility of getting this legislation passed. And at both across the state, one of the organizations that we belong to, the credit union belongs to, is called the Equity Agenda Coalition, and public banking in New York State is one of the primary platforms. So along with the Public Banking Institute, which is a fabulous way to get educated about what public banking is, I would really encourage listeners who are interested to go to the Public Banking Institute's website because they have great YouTube videos. You know, they have great videos that are quite educational and break it down to help more people understand it. For the local Rochester Coalition, the town hall that Simeon mentioned absolutely is one example, and that is also available if anyone wants to go and listen to that. And it's just, again, educating. We're trying to educate other organizations in Rochester so that they can then go and educate their constituents to build the coalition to get more knowledge and interest about the importance of having money for the public good and recycling for the benefit of important public initiatives in Rochester.
Thank you, Melissa. To touch on what you said about the Public Banking Institute's website, I'm actually looking at a printout here that I prepared for the show of the frequently asked questions. There's no shortage of questions here with a lot of good and detailed answers here. We can go over those questions in a moment, but Simeon had something he'd like to add. So, Simeon, take it away.
Yeah, just really quickly, Dave. I mean, you grounded us in the practical, and that's really a critical thing for us to do as we flesh out the details. But I do want to take a moment for us to blue sky a little bit, because the public's imagination about what this could be is going to be a really critical feature. Imagine a city where there are the kinds of resources to invest in the things that we know are going to contribute to the vibrancy of the city. Imagine a city where when you walk into a bank, you know that you've got a chance at walking out with what you need to start your business or to extend your business in ways that are going to contribute back to hiring folks in the local community. We need to embrace the imagination here about how we can transform this community to work in ways that are equitable and create a more healthy, vibrant future for generations to come.
You know, the only state in the nation, as we've talked about earlier on this episode, that has a public banking system is North Dakota. Came about in 1919 as a way to give farmers more favorable rates on loans. Eric Hardmeyer, the CEO of that bank, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in 2013. I'd like to just read really quickly a little bit from it because I found it interesting that he was not necessarily advocating for the model elsewhere. And then I want to turn this to you, Walt. So he writes, quote, "Today, the bank receives many calls from people interested in starting a state-owned bank, and our response is consistent. We do not advocate the use of this model elsewhere. It is an issue for each individual state or municipality, and each must determine what is best for its needs." And then he goes on to say, "The insight that we provide is this. The Bank of North Dakota is successful because we are partners with North Dakota's financial institutions, not competitors." Walt, is this the CEO of the Bank of North Dakota, just is this him being a little cautious?
Well,
in saying we don't advocate this model elsewhere?
Well, I think there are kinds of ways that you can interpret that. They are just not advocates. They are bankers, and he really emphasizes that their role is, you know, we're not protagonists. We're running a bank. His point is certainly that if you want to have a bank like this, you need to know what it is you want it to do. And that's his first point. The second would be that you want to have bankers operate it as opposed to development-minded people who want to spend money on certain programs with abandon. And basically, you know, it's a local determination. It's something, if this makes sense, by all means, do it, but also work in partnership with local community financial institutions because they are a very strong component of the local economy. They are the ones who've been getting the money into the hands of the community at various levels through mortgages, through various lending, through CDFIs, et cetera, and credit unions.
How often are you hearing from legislators in, across the country, state legislators or local lawmakers who are looking for information about this, Walt?
We're very, very, very busy doing that all over the country. We probably have about 30 different prospective activities going on at both state and regional and municipal levels. And as you say, it is a very much a growing topic, a growing interest, in part because the debt is growing at the governmental level, and the banks basically control the purse strings. They determine what you can borrow and how much they're going to charge you for it. That's a nice situation to be in, but it's one that the people should be a position the people should be in with their money. And so it's really a matter of bringing in a whole new capability for the local democracy to determine what it's going to do with its own money, as opposed to sending it away and saying sayonara and good luck.
Is there a minimum that you need to set up one of these banks?
Yes,
a minimum investment.
Yeah, well, it varies from state to state. It would depend upon the banking committee or the banking department of the state. So that's really something that would get determined locally. But one of the things that's important to remember is the bank needs to be scaled to be big enough to be able to make an impact. So the capital, which is the nest egg that never gets spent and from which you leverage your lending, it needs to be of significant enough size so that you can actually start to make a difference into the community. There have been a number of business plans.
Go ahead. Well, I wanted to just get real quick because I know I only have about another minute and a half here. But, you know, there would be an argument, and it's on your list of frequently asked questions. You know, isn't this putting, you know, taxpayer money at risk? Is some risk with this, though, right?
Well, that's why you
hire lending, I suppose.
Exactly. But that's why you hire professional bankers, because banks are all about managing risk. And there are ways that you can guarantee and secure that risk is not so high. The public banks have a strong record of having much lower risk than typical commercial banking interests.
Thank you.
And it's already at risk with the banks where it currently lives.
Good point, Simeon. Yeah. Thank you so much to my guests. Every time I host this show, I get caught off guard by the music, and I never get to properly thank my guests. I am so appreciative of your time. Melissa Marquez, CEO of the Genesee Co-op Federal Credit Union and founding member of the Rochester Public Banking Coalition, thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Simeon Bannister, Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation. We're delighted to have you. It's great to see you.
Good to be with you.
Walter McCree of McCree of the Public Banking Institute, thank you for your time. And Assemblymember Harry Bronson, thank you for keeping us in touch with the legislation that you have going on in Albany.
Thank you, David.